5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and this is MPBN Radio. Ahead on Main Things Considered this evening, Governor Paul LePage's drug summit is already drawing criticism for who is not taking part. U.S. Senator Angus King on cybersecurity and competition in the race for mayor in Portland. Those stories in a moment. First, this news. I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. The FBI is offering a reward of up to $20,000 for help in finding two N.C. Wyeth paintings stolen from a private home in Portland. Keith Shordahl has more.
A total of six Wyeth paintings were stolen from the home of a Portland businessman in 2013. Four were recovered from a pawn shop in Beverly Hills, but the other two were never found. In announcing the $20,000 reward, the FBI is also asking for the public's help to find the missing paintings, identified as The Encounter on Freshwater Cliff and Go Dutton and That Right Speedily. Three men have been prosecuted in the theft, including Oscar Roberts, an aspiring rapper who used the stolen paintings to secure a $100,000 loan from a Beverly Hills pawn shop. The shop, the Dina Collection, is featured in a reality TV series, Beverly Hills Pawn. For MPBN News, I'm Keith Shortall.
It's been another hot, humid day in Maine, with some counties still under air quality alerts. Temperatures got to about 90 degrees today, unusually warm for this time of year. And Tom Hawley of the National Weather Service in Gray says it's also very still.
There's hardly a breath of wind out there, so the ozone that's builds up in the atmosphere just kind of stays at the ground level, doesn't get mixed up and pushed out of the area. So hopefully things will change over the next couple of days.
Hawley says the extremely uncomfortable weather is on its way out, with temperatures tomorrow in the 80s and on Thursday in the 70s. The Maine Department of Environmental Protection issued air quality alerts today for Cumberland, York, and Sagadahoc counties. They'll be in effect until 11 tonight. During air quality alerts, people should avoid exerting themselves outdoors and shouldn't use small gas-powered engines like lawnmowers, leaf blowers, tractors, and chainsaws. And authorities have found the body of a 71-year-old Deer Isle man who was reported missing yesterday afternoon. The body of Bruce Greenlaw was located early this morning. Authorities say it looks like Greenlaw, who had dementia and had missed his medication, suffered a medical event. In weather tonight, as we heard, clear and muggy with some fog along the coast in the valleys, lows in the 60s. Tomorrow, some showers in the north, west, and central parts of the state, partly to mostly sunny and humid statewide. I'm Nora Flaherty. This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Nora Flaherty. We got some more details for the governor's drug summit next week today, and as expected, the list of invitees includes the state and federal law enforcement officials and local police. Public Safety Commissioner John Morris, who's coordinating the event, says the main purpose is to address public safety issues. But as Mel Leary reports, the summit is already drawing criticism because of who it doesn't include.
The list of participants has a lot of heavy hitters from law enforcement and the criminal justice system, including Chief Justice Lee Sofley and Attorney General Janet Mills, the U.S. Attorney for Maine Tom Delahanty, and other state and local law enforcement leaders are among the 23 stakeholders invited to the private meeting that will also be closed to the press. But it's not who's on the list of invitees that's getting attention. It's who has been excluded. Only three representatives from the treatment and recovery community will be represented, and no addicts themselves.
Drug addiction and the drug crisis that we're facing is fundamentally a public health issue, not a public safety issue.
That's Omarishi Amarishingham, policy counsel at the ACLU of Maine. She says if the governor truly wants to address the opioid crisis, his summit should be about more than public safety.
What we've seen over the last 40 years is a concerted effort to try and address the drug crisis with law enforcement, and that clearly has not worked.
Commissioner Morris agrees that Maine's drug problem should be addressed on multiple levels. But Morris says Governor LePage made it clear from the start that the primary focus of this summit will be to combat the state's heroin epidemic. Two hospitals that provide substance abuse treatment will be represented at the summit, along with the state's emergency medical services director. And Morris says they will be able to share their concerns as they relate to public safety.
And a critical part of that public safety in this crisis is EMS providers, emergency rooms and hospitals. And so therefore, I have asked these high-level hospital people to come so we can hear what their issues are.
Health and Human Services Commissioner Mary Mayhew will also attend the summit. She agrees with Morris that the focus of this summit should be on public safety, but she says her department is also working on strategies to improve prevention and treatment programs. She says, like Medicaid and Medicare develop measures to improve quality of health care, the department will develop measures to judge effectiveness of treatment providers.
To compare one substance abuse treatment provider against the next, and to establish payment policies that reward high performers and incentivize high-quality substance abuse treatment.
House Speaker Mark Eaves, a Democrat from North Berwick, is also critical of the makeup of the summit. He says treatment providers as well as prevention experts should be part of the mix. And he notes that no lawmakers have been invited to attend, even though the legislature sets policy and funds the various programs dealing with drug abuse.
It can only be helpful to have an all-of-the-above approach where lawmakers are at the table finding solutions with healthcare professionals, law enforcement officials, individuals from the governor's staff. That's how we're going to be able to solve this problem.
Morris dismisses that criticism, again stressing that the purpose of the summit is to explore ways to make the best use of existing public safety and law enforcement resources.
I have gathered a group of critical thinkers in the public safety field. This is not a political event.
And Governor LePage was dismissive of legislative involvement in the issue when he was asked last week if he would seek additional resources from the legislature to address the heroin epidemic specifically and the drug abuse problem in general.
Have you seen any success that I've had with the legislature? Thank you.
Morris says that while the summit itself will be closed to the press to allow the participants to discuss law enforcement strategies, there will be a briefing afterward, so that participants can discuss their findings and recommendations. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
The threat from cyber criminals is greater than many Maine businesses realize, but there are also resources available to help learn more about protecting data. That was the message today anyway at a forum in South Portland hosted by independent U.S. Senator Angus King and the Maine State Chamber. Tom Porter has more.
Maine's two U.S. senators have both put their weight behind efforts in Congress to pass a comprehensive cybersecurity bill, an issue whose importance is underlined, they say, by a number of recent data breaches, including one at the federal government's Office of Personnel Management earlier this summer.
This is a ubiquitous, constant threat to everybody, to every company, large and small.
Independent Senator Angus King, who spoke to more than 100 guests at the offices of Texas Instruments in South Portland, says he hopes to vote on a measure this fall, the Cyber Information Sharing Act.
In the meantime, though, there's a lot that can be done without waiting for Congress, without waiting for the government to pass particular pieces of legislation, and that's why we're here today.
So we're looking at security, resilience, reliability of our nation's cyber and communications infrastructure.
I think that cybersecurity and overall IT security needs to be better defined within organizations and embedded within the organization's culture.
Mike Leaking is with the Department of Homeland Security's Office of Cybersecurity and Communications, which he says has grown tenfold in size over recent years, but still needs more people. Leaking has spent the last 4 years traveling the New England region, advising companies how to avoid getting hacked. While installing security software can be costly, he admits, especially for small businesses, there are a lot of measures companies can take for little or no cost.
So basic cyber hygiene practices, basic best practices that are freely available, they're listed on our website. Things like changing default passwords, awareness and training curriculums, and a wealth of other information that's all available.
I think I got the big picture as to what's going on to prevent cybercrime.
Kathy Leonard is chief executive of Auburn Manufacturing, Inc., a producer producer and exporter of high-performance textiles based in central Maine.
We're one of those small to medium-sized businesses that was talked about today, and I can tell you that we're ignorant as far as what we should be doing about cybercrime.
Leonard says she uses an outside consultant to deal with IT security issues and had always thought she had a fairly reliable computer system, but now she thinks more work needs to be done to protect the company's data.
To date, I don't think we've been hacked, but on the other hand, we've been the victim of hacking done to one of our customers. And in fact, you know, we lost an order because of it.
Leonard says her company was about to ship a container to Southeast Asia, but had to cancel the order because no payment had been received. It turns out, she says, that the customer had paid for the shipment, but had been duped into paying the wrong people, cyber criminals posing online as Auburn Manufacturing. Leonard says the hackers got the money and disappeared without a trace. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
And you can find a link to the federal government's Office of Cybersecurity and Communications by checking out this story at news.mpbn.net. And finally today, a former state lawmaker and longtime political commentator is taking on incumbent Michael Brennan in this fall's Portland mayoral race. Ethan Stringling narrowly lost to Brennan 4 years ago. As Jay Field reports, Brennan submitted signatures for his reelection a few hours after Stringling's announcement.
The day of maneuvering aimed at Portland's top job began on a sweltering street corner. Ethan Stringling lives at the corner of Spring and Brackett Streets, a short walk from Learning Works, the community education and mental health agency he runs. Standing outside the entrance to the nonprofit, Stringling shared the news his supporters have been waiting for.
People want to be able to say, I'm raising my kids in Portland because we have the best schools in the state. And I work in Portland. I found a job in Portland that pays me a livable wage. And I'm here today announcing that I am running for mayor because I want to bring us together to make that vision a reality.
The announcement marks a change of heart for Stringling, who said a few months ago that he didn't have any plans for a rematch with Michael Brennan.
What's really changed is that in the last month, I've heard from more and more and more people talking about the potential of what this city can become. People want this city to reach its greatest potential.
Implicit in this message is that the city is not reaching its greatest potential under Mayor Brennan. When asked by reporters to critique the mayor's first term in office, Stringling declined, for now at least.
We'll have time to talk more about that. At the moment, I'm really just out listening to people. I think that people feel like they want to be united around the solutions that we're trying to achieve for this city.
Stringling says specific policy ideas to improve education and create more affordable housing, jobs, and economic opportunity in Maine's largest city will come later. For now, Stringling and an army of volunteers will fan out across the city, talking with voters and collecting the 300 signatures he needs by next Tuesday at 4:30. To officially qualify for the ballot.
Hello.
Hey there.
Hello, how are you?
Good. It's dropping off today.
I am.
A few hours after Stringling's announcement, Mayor Brennan handed his signatures to Melissa LaChance, the election administrator in the Portland City Clerk's office.
He'll sign off on this, which states that once we've certified, you will not withdraw. And then I'll get you a receipt to that for your records.
Thank you.
I'll take all
and
of this. Yep.
And we're all set. And you'll
we're
let me know.
Set. Absolutely. Give
Thank
me a call
you.
As soon as we're ready.
Brennan met the media outside the clerk's office.
This is the third time that Ethan and I have been involved in a race with one another. So I think we both kind of know what we're getting into.
Prior to the mayoral race 4 years ago, the two rivals lost to Shelley Pingree in the 2008 Democratic primary in Maine's 1st congressional district. Brennan says he's confident about the record he's preparing to run on.
Unemployment is under 4% now. We have growth in all the important sectors within the city. We have people that are moving to the city, so we have population growth. But we still have issues related to affordable housing. I'd like to see broadband in the city, and we still need to continue to look at ways to improve our school system.
Seven other candidates are exploring runs for mayor. They include City Councilor Ed Soslovic, Christopher Vail, who ran in 2011, Portland activist Tom McMillan, bar owner Ben Culver, Brendan Glass, a student at the Maine College of Art, and city residents Carl Nordley and Zahair Buzara. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
And at 13 minutes before 6, it's time to check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
We are certainly in the thick of it. Sizzling tropical heat wave throughout southwestern interior portions of the state, leading into a generally clear night. Areas of valley and coastal fog late, quite muggy, 60 statewide. Tomorrow's sunshine will be limited over northern, western, and central Maine, with a few showers, maybe some isolated afternoon thunder. However, once the patchy fog vaporizes, partly cloudy down east, more sun than clouds, Booth Bay south and west with oppressive humidity. Low 80s north, 90s south, cooler along the coast. Thursday, areas of dense fog, especially along the coast east of Casco Bay, and then more sun than clouds for much of the state. Still extremely humid, 81 to 87 north to south. Friday muddled as a weak front stalls across Maine. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Ed Morin, Barbara Caridi, and Susan Sharon. I'm Nora Flaherty.